Last night I wanted to vomit. When I saw Obama giving a hug to Hillary, a giant lingering hug after his speech promoting her. Is this an understandable reaction? I believe most folks in America, even those who grudgingly support Hillary Rodham Clinton as the only liberal hope, must have experienced at least some level of discomfort and nausea. Think of all of the empty promises, unfulfilled boasts, empty rhetoric, maddening decisions, failures of the GDP and foreign policy, statecraft implosions, refusals to take responsibility, cocky reactions, rejections of friends and support of enemies, and now it's Hillary's turn. It was almost like watching a race where the baton was passed near Hades, the marathon to the gates of hell. And we still have one more night for Hillary's own speech. Stay tuned, sports fans. Good morning. Well, it's Kelly here, and I got to be honest with you. I found the hug between Obama, the lingering hug. I mean, wow. My head was swimming when I saw that. I mean, when you think about the bad blood that, you know, exists between Obama and Hillary, and the fact that Hillary was just examined by the FBI and barely was one step ahead of the hangman. And, Barack Obama gives her a speech and then that hug. It was just absolutely disgusting. And she just clung to him like a barnacle on the hull of the Titanic. And then she just seemed so thrilled. It was just, And then he says, he mouths, "I'm proud of you." And she's, "Oh, thank you." Like he rescued her and her baby out of a burning building. It was surreal. Anyway, I've got plenty of speeches here for you. And if you can stomach them. And I didn't think the president's speech was really that. I don't know. I just didn't really even find it that interesting, to be honest. I mean, just more of the same. But anyway, so they released some more. They released some more of these stuff from the, you know, WikiLeaks. Now there's this battle. There's a very strange and weird war going on between Trump and the media, in which the media is claiming that Trump is ginning up an attack, some sort of a cyber attack against America. And basically, they said that people were saying that it is the Russians that are stealing these emails and giving them to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks won't say where the emails came from. They said it would compromise the information. And so in the midst of that, Trump says, "Well, if you guys are behind this, or whoever the Russians or whoever, why don't you release the other 30,000 emails of Hillary?" And so now there's this giant. The media is enraged and Hillary's infuriated, and many pundits out there, "How dare you call down a cyber attack on America?" I mean, it's really absurd. And, but I mean, once again, they're saying, is this playing into Trump's hands? And I mean, think about what a master chess player Trump is. Because, for example, he took someone who was spent his entire life thinking that he was the chosen one, and that nothing would stop him. And he got into the Senate and immediately ran for president. And of course, I'm not talking about Obama. I'm talking about Cruz. Cruz doesn't make it this time, and Trump tricks him into killing him, you know, like political suicide. So anyway, it's just it would be interesting. But here's the thing. If Trump gets whatever group is out there that has these emails to release them, and they're one of these 30,000, which how would they know it? They would know it because it would be from this time period from Hillary, and it would be not one of the emails that is in this pack. And you would know it, therefore, because it would have possibly information about this, you know, let's say, for instance, Hillary said that, you know, she was getting rid of this, these 30,000 emails that she personally decided did not have anything to do with, didn't have anything to do with national security. And, but on the other hand, there was some private, if there was anything top secret, then the argument would be that she would have to be at this point, she would have to be prosecuted. So I don't know. I mean, it's all kind of makes your head swim. But I'm going to get a little clip here of this for you and let you onto it. But it's just been an incredible. And now key members of the GOP are attacking Trump. Once again, the GOP finds another reason to attack Trump. Because the purpose of the GOP is to attack their own party. And I just think the way that this whole thing has been conducted, if Hillary Clinton gets in again, she's going to continue on with what Barack Obama has been up to, which is globalism, which is the economic wing of the political correctness, multiculturalism. It's going to destroy America, who we used to be anyway, and we're halfway there already. Here's a little bit from CNN on the emails.
I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press. Let's see if that happens.
Now, a Donald Trump spokesman, Jason Miller, earlier today sent out about 7 tweets trying to clarify what Donald Trump said at this news conference, saying that Trump by no means was calling on the Russians to hack into any U.S. servers to find those emails, instead saying that the GOP nominee was really just saying if the Russians had these emails, they should turn them over to the FBI. But Wolf, consider that Donald Trump's vice presidential running mate, Mike Pence, put out a statement shortly after Donald Trump's remarks saying that this would be met with serious consequences if the Russians are indeed behind all of this. Well,
the fallout from the comments, Jim, are very, very significant. We aren't only hearing from Hillary Clinton's campaign, a lot of Democrats, but also, as you point out, from some key members of his own party.
That's right, Wolf. The Clinton campaign was very quick to put out a statement slamming Donald Trump for all of this. That was to be expected. But Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, said through a spokesman earlier today that Vladimir Putin is a thug who should stay out of the U.S. election. Wolf, that is right after Paul Ryan was essentially presiding over the Republican convention in Cleveland for the Speaker of the House to come out and essentially go off on his own party's nominee. And these comments about Putin today was just another astonishing development for what was really just an astonishing day to hear the Republican nominee talking this way about the Russians. Really sort of had everybody's jaw dropping in that press conference room, Wolf.
All right, so here's the thing that I find amazing about this. We have no idea who got these emails. It could have been anybody. There are literally thousands or tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who would have the art or the skill or the craft to be able to go hack into a system like that and get the emails out. And yet this thing is playing out like something from a James Bond movie. It's been suggested that it's the Russians who did it. Therefore, it's the Russians who did it. And now the GOP is attacking Trump. And all he said is, if you're the people that got these emails, if you already have Hillary's emails, which most people think somebody out there already has her emails, and it would actually be beneficial to us to know if this was true, then please, can you release them? And now they're attacking Trump like he's Satan. It is I've never seen anything like this election, and it goes on and on. All right, let's take a break here. 616 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. If you have an opinion on it, but I predict that Trump is going to play these guys again, and the upshot is that it's going to somehow work out in his favor, and I wouldn't be surprised if one of the 30,000 emails is sent to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks releases it, and it's top secret information, and then Hillary's got that to deal with. Been listening a little bit to Herbie Hancock. Here's Watermelon Man. 617 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Another classic jazz song. Absolute classic. And we'll be right back to carry on with the email and then dive into the convention issues and speeches. All right, so we do have Ben Rossin coming. Let me check my text and actually see if he didn't say otherwise here. But, yeah, we've got Ben Rossin coming, and it's going to be a little bit tight here, but I want to – well, let me play a little more on the emails because I think it's a big development. Check this out.
It is day one of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
CNN, Christine Amanpour.
Yep, and already high drama. Hacked emails showing the Democratic National Committee favored Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders to win the White House have forced out the DNC chair. And it's also raising a very troubling question.
The hackers that got into the DNC are very likely to be working in coordination with Russia. And again, I think it's, if the Russians in fact had these emails, again, I don't think it's very coincidental that they're being released at this time to create maximum damage on Hillary Clinton and to help Donald Trump.
So is Vladimir Putin actively meddling in the U.S. election to help his preferred candidate? Trump tweeted, quote, "The new joke in town is that Russia leaked the disastrous DNC emails, which should never have been written, stupid, because Putin likes me." The FBI is investigating all of this, and with me now from New York is David Roscoe, CEO and editor of Foreign Policy Magazine. Welcome to the program. It sounds a little bit like a spy novel or a spy James Bond story. Do you feel there's any merit in the accusations that this goes all the way back to Russia, to the government?
There seems to be a lot of evidence to that effect. When people looked at some of the trails on the email and on the hacks that took place with the DNC, they found metadata that was in Cyrillic, metadata that bore the kind of telltale fingerprints of some Russian hacking groups that are pretty well known, APP-28, APP-29, and so on. And so it seems right now that the evidence is strong that the hack came from Russia and that the release of the information was designed to have maximum political impact to the negative on Hillary Clinton.
In fact, you mentioned the previous hacks. Some, of course, apparently the same ones who attacked the White House, State Department, and the Joint Chiefs. there is obviously a lot of talk about the so-called closeness between Trump and the Trump campaign and President Putin. Not only the mutual admiration that they profess for each other, but all sorts of issues. For instance, you know, Paul Manafort, the campaign campaign, was a former advisor to the Russian-backed Ukrainian President Yanukovych. I mean, does that make you suspicious?
Well, it certainly is worth noting. You know, the Trump business has gotten a lot of money out of Russia, out of financiers who are very close to Putin in the past. Manafort, the campaign chairman, has longstanding ties to Yanukovych, who's a close tie, has close ties to Putin. This hack suggests.
Well, look, I'm going to cut this off. There's like five more minutes of it, but let me say this: this hack stuff was going on before Donald showed up. You know, the hacking into Hillary stuff was before Trump was running for office, before Paul Manafort was even thought of. So to suggest that somebody has a time machine and went back, you know, it's just, Trump uses a time machine to go back and get the Russians involved. If the Russians are involved, they're involved. But I don't think you can you can't blame this on Trump. I mean, this stuff has been in the works, and anyway, I find it somewhat shocking that all of a sudden this is all Trump's fault. I mean, Hillary Clinton had an unsecured email server that she built or someone built for her that was in her garage. It was in parts. Part of it was in her bathroom. If you can imagine that, going into the linen closet and seeing a server in somebody's, can you imagine going to her house and going to the bathroom and looking for toilet paper and finding the server in there? Huh, that's weird. So then, and the other part was in the garage, and whatever little security service that it had on it, devices she had disabled. So, I mean, this thing is just sitting there. Anybody, even an amateur hacker, could have gotten into this thing. But all of a sudden, it's Trump's fault. One more bizarre claim. Here is Senator Tim Kaine accepting the Democratic vice presidential nomination.
Today, for my wife, Ann, and every strong woman in this country, for Nat, Woody, and Anella, and every young person starting out in life to make their own dreams real, for every man and woman serving our country in the military, at home or abroad, for every working family working hard to get ahead and stay ahead, for my parents and in-laws and every senior citizen who hopes for a dignified retirement with health care and research to end diseases like Alzheimer's, for every American who wants our country to be a beloved community where people aren't demeaned because of who they are, but rather respected for their contributions to this nation, and for all of us who know that the brightest future for our country is the one that we build together, and for my friend Hillary Clinton, I humbly accept my party's nomination to be Vice President of the United States.
All right, there's that. And here is Tim Kaine's disrespect, his attack against Trump.
I wonder. Donald Trump. Trump is a guy who promises a lot. But you might have noticed, he's got a way of saying the same two words every time he makes his biggest, hugest promises. Believe me. It's going to be great. Believe me. We're going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. Believe me. We're going to destroy ISIS so fast. Believe me. There's nothing suspicious in my tax returns. Believe me. By the way, does anybody in this massive auditorium believe that Donald Trump's been paying his fair share of taxes? Does anybody here believe that Trump ought to release his tax returns just like every other presidential candidate in modern history? Of course he should. Hey, Donald, what are you hiding? And yet, Donald still says, believe me. Believe me.
It was, to be honest, watching it, a very awkward speech. He's not a natural speaker. He's got a background in which he said he dropped out of law school to go work for the church. And he's personally, this is what I don't understand, personally opposed to abortion, but he supports abortion rights. That's like being personally a vegetarian, but you do eat hamburgers as often as you can. All right, let's take a break here. And it is 6:30. We'll come back and hear some of Obama's speech, which was, like I said, I found the speech to be irritating. And I've never really understood why Obama is so in love with himself. But maybe that's all he had, was this kind of false sense of bonhomie and confidence, spring in a step and everything. But the hug of he and Hillary at the end, like they were very tight, that they loved each other, that he just was, you know, so attached to her, was just one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. I'm not kidding. 6:31, Kelly O'Connell, and 523-1450 to call in. We will be right back. For Obama. Okay, the speech of the night, I thought, was Joe Biden's. I thought it was the best delivered. And here's just a few clips of that, about from that, before we get into Obama.
Not only do we have the largest economy in the world, we have the strongest economy in the world. We have the most productive workers in the world. And given a fair shot, given a fair chance, Americans have never, ever, ever, ever let their country down. Never. Never. Ordinary people like us who do extraordinary things. We've had candidates before who attempted to get elected by appealing to our fears, but they've never succeeded because we do not scare easily. We never bow. We never bend. We never break when confronted with crisis. No, we endure, we overcome, and we always, always, always move forward. That's why I can say with absolute conviction, I am more optimistic about our chances today than when I was elected as a 29-year-old kid to the Senate. The 21st century is going to be the American century. Because we lead not only by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. That is the history of the journey of America. And God willing, Hillary Clinton will write the next chapter in that journey. We are America, second to none, and we own the finish line. Don't forget it. God bless you all, and may God protect us.
All right, that's the end of the speech, obviously. And here is a pretty effective line about Donald Trump.
Give me a second without booing or cheering. I mean this sincerely. We should really think about this. His cynicism is unbounded. His lack of empathy and compassion can be summed up in a phrase I suspect he's most proud of having made famous. You're fired. I mean, really, I'm not joking. Think about that. Think about that. Think about everything you learned as a child, no matter where you were raised. How can there be pleasure in saying you're fired? He's trying to tell us he cares about the middle class. Give me a break. That's a bunch of malarkey. Tell you. Folks, whatever he thinks, and I mean this in the bottom of my heart, I know I'm called middle class Joe, in Washington that's not meant as a compliment. It means you're not sophisticated, but I know why we're strong. I know why we have held together. I know why we are united. It's because there's always been a growing middle class. This guy doesn't have a clue about the middle class. Not a clue.
Ironically, the middle class has really been under extraordinary attack since this president got into office. And Joe Biden has been at the very top of the power structure, as he says, and since his 20s, he's not middle class. I mean, he's one of the elites. Anyway, we'll take a little break here. I'm listening to this, thinking about how this guy, he's fighting for the worker and everything. How many people that have come here without papers who haven't followed the law that the government could have processed and either forced to go through whatever or just made them leave, have taken away American jobs, millions upon millions upon millions of jobs that these people have given to non-Americans that have just walked across the border or found some other way to get in. It's not just Mexicans. It's people from all over the world have come here and are here illegally working. 6:40, we'll take a break and come back and listen to the president. All right, so tonight is Hillary's acceptance speech, and we won't have to hear any more boring speeches. But here's a little five-minute clip of the president's speech.
I was thinking about the story I told you 12 years ago tonight about my Kansas grandparents and the things they taught me when I was growing up. See, my grandparents, they came from the heartland. Their ancestors began settling there about 200 years ago. I don't know if they had their birth certificates, but they were there. And they were Scotch-Irish mostly. Farmers, teachers, ranch hands, pharmacists, oil rig workers. Hardy, small-town folk. Some were Democrats, but a lot of them, maybe even most of them, were Republicans. Party of Lincoln. And my grandparents explained, folks in these parts, they didn't like show-offs. They didn't admire braggarts or bullies. They didn't respect mean-spiritedness. For folks who were always looking for shortcuts in life. Instead, what they valued were traits like honesty and hard work, kindness, courtesy, humility, responsibility, helping each other out. That's what they believed in. True things. Things that last. The things we try to teach our kids. And what my grandparents understood was that these values weren't limited to Kansas. They weren't limited to small towns. These values could travel to Hawaii. They could travel even to the other side of the world, where my mother would end up working to help poor women get a better life, trying to apply those values. My grandparents knew these values weren't reserved for one race. They could be passed down to a half-Kenyan grandson or a half-Asian granddaughter. In fact, they were the same values Michelle's parents, the descendants of slaves, taught their own kids living in a bungalow on the south side of Chicago. They knew these values were exactly what drew immigrants here. And they believed that the children of those immigrants were just as American as their own. Whether they wore a cowboy hat or a yarmulke, a baseball cap or a hijab. America has changed over the years. But these values that my grandparents taught me, they haven't gone anywhere. They're as strong as ever, still cherished by people of every party, every race, every faith. They live on in each of us. What makes us American, what makes us patriots, is what's in here. That's what matters. And that's why we can take the food and music and holidays and styles of other countries and blend it into something uniquely ours. That's why we can attract strivers and entrepreneurs from around the globe to build new factories and create new industries here. That's why our military can look the way it does. Every shade of humanity forged into common service. That's why anyone who threatens our values, whether fascists or communists or jihadists or homegrown demagogues, will always fail in the end.
Is Obama to be opposed to all of those or a member of all those? Anywhere, here's attack on his attack on Trump.
That is America. That is America. Those bonds of affection, that common creed. We don't fear the future. We shape it. We embrace it as one people, stronger together than we are on our own. That's what Hillary Clinton understands. This fighter, this stateswoman, this mother and grandmother, this public servant, this patriot, that's the America she's fighting for.
Is it? Is Hillary fighting to make America greater, or is she fighting to crash land the undertaking? You know, it's hard to not draw the conclusion that Obama wants America smaller and to just stand back in line, depending or totally irrelevant to whatever he's speaking. Wouldn't you love to have a psychological study, a true insight into his brain, what he really believes, which I think is pretty obvious. He's some type of socialist, some type of Marxist. Wouldn't you love, though, to see a psychological history of the guy, find out what motivated him, what his true goals are? 6:49, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and we'll be right back. All right, so the president's speech ended with a big hug of Hillary, a lingering hug that was just disgusting because it represents everything wrong in politics, the just crazy ambition, the willingness to do anything to get elected and reelected and get to be the presidency, and just the lack of honor. And anyway, here's back to the emails. Was Putin's bad blood with Clinton behind the DNC hacking?
Details of that DNC hack we were talking about and the motivation behind it. Hari Srinivasan is in Washington with that story.
Thanks, Judy. For that, I spoke earlier this evening with former U.S. Ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul. He's now a professor at Stanford University. And Thomas Ridd, who joined us via Skype from Austria. He's a professor at King's College London. He's written extensively about cyber attacks and digital security, most recently in his book, The Rise of the Machines. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
Hi. Great to be here.
Thomas, I want to start with you. First, lay out the evidence for us. We've heard that this is the Russian government. How do we know that this was Russia? How do we know that this was a sophisticated act that might take a state actor?
So there are two bits to the evidence. The first is who hacked the DNC. The second is who gave the emails to WikiLeaks. On the first bit, who hacked the DNC? Imagine a burglary and you find fingerprints in a house. And then you find the same fingerprints in another house, and you know who breached into one house but not the other. That's a bit the situation that we're looking at here. So we have IP addresses, we have server infrastructure, we have certificates. So quite strong evidence to say that the DNC was actually hacked by groups that are associated with Russia.
Well, Michael McFaul, are you convinced that it was Russia? Is this the way that they operate?
Well, first, more generally, Russia has tremendous capability in this domain. I worked in the government for 5 years. I witnessed it. I saw it. And we should just all say that first. Second, the reports that we have, just like Thomas just said, are very suggestive that it was two different Russian entities. The organization, the company that investigated it, CrowdStrike, was rather definitive in their analysis that they published a month ago, by the way, not just a few days ago. And now today we have many senior U.S. government officials also confirming that they have strong suspicions that it was these Russian entities.
Mr. Ritt, I want to ask, you know, is this consistent with previous hacks that the Russian government might have orchestrated? Does this fall within their definition of what is allowed within how they carry out cyber warfare?
So the Russian government and intelligence community have been hacking and breaching adversary computer networks for a very long time, literally for 20 years this year. But this is the first time that they breached the system and didn't just exfiltrate, take out data, but then started putting those files into the public domain in order to affect, in this case, a democratic election campaign. That's new. That's a game changer, I think. So stealing, yes, but dumping into the public domain, that we haven't seen before. Can I just add a bit of an international perspective here? We have the same entity that was caught in the DNC's networks was also caught in the German parliament in the Bundestag in May 2015. The same entity was caught in a French TV station and actually interrupted their programming around the same time. It was caught in other European military networks, and the attribution is actually quite strong in those cases. The German government has come out publicly and pointed the finger at Russian military intelligence.
Michael Mafal, why would Russia want to do this? What are their interests in publicizing this intel if they were, in fact, the ones that acquired it in the first place?
I think there are two different kinds of arguments to think about here. One is the policy argument. There's no question in my mind that the Kremlin, President Putin, and others have said this rather clearly, in my view, that they prefer Trump to Clinton in terms of his policies. He said things that they like. But there's another element that I don't think has gotten as much attention, and that is that this is also personal. If you go back and you look at what Vladimir Putin and others said back during their last electoral round, they criticized Secretary Clinton personally for what they alleged was her meddling in their internal affairs. She criticized a parliamentary election back in December 2011. She said it was not free and fair or had problems. I don't remember the exact statement. And Putin then said she incited, I think the word he used, gave protesters a signal to come out and protest against him. So Putin's a guy that remembers these things. Maybe that's another explanation for why they're seeking this tit for tat now.
I want to pick up on something you said a little earlier, is that this sort of intelligence tradecraft happens all the time, that we are probably participating in some of it, some country somewhere. Is the difference then that it's happening to the United States?
Well, I would put it somewhat differently. Let's be candid here. Do we really believe that the DNC is the only organization in the United States that the Russians have hacked? No, I don't believe that. They have an active operation here where they're constantly seeking to gather intelligence.
All right, so that's Michael Mafal. He was the ambassador to Russia. So Russia hacks the DNC, gets damaging emails that cause the Medusa goat face Wasserman Schultz to have to leave. Now, here's the question. And this is an open question. I don't claim to know the answer. If Russia prefers Trump over Clinton, Hillary Clinton, does that mean that Hillary Clinton would be a better leader for America? I mean, is that the conclusion you draw? Or does it mean that, as usual, Hillary can't get along with anybody? Anyway, we'll take you out here. Should be a little bit of Ben Ross in a few minutes. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. KOBE 523-1450 to call in. We'll be back. And it is interesting days, isn't it?
Sounds good.
All right, it's 7:06. It is the 28th day of July, and we're hopefully picking our way through the hottest days, and I'm hoping to see some rain, more rain. We had a nice rain the night before last. Now, before we get into Ben Rossin and the Rossin Report, and Ben's joined me in the studio this morning, I wanted to let you know a few things, one of which is that the polling has broken for Trump, even during the convention. The polling is now, he's now 7.5 points ahead. Now, usually during a convention, the momentum shifts for the other, for the group that is having their convention. So will this last? We have no idea. But I do know one thing, that Trump seems to understand media and the effect of statements and ideas and personalities and drama and conflict better than anybody that I have ever seen. He's obviously, during his time in public life and his, especially his time with his reality show, been able to deduce and extract and reduce what it means to influence people's opinions to a level perhaps never seen in American politics. Anyway, Trump up 7.5 points. And if you saw the hug between Hillary and Obama last night that seemed to last for hours, well, I hope you had an air sickness bag with you. That's all I can say. Anyway, we do have Ben Rossin here in the Rossin Report. Good morning to you, Ben. Great to see you.
Good morning, Kelly. Great to be here this morning.
Well, great to have you. And have you been able to see any of the Republican or the Democrat conventions?
It has been fun to watch. I will tell you that I really enjoyed the Republican convention, but the Democrat convention has been very, very entertaining.
Well, they started off with losing Debbie, who I have affectionately nicknamed Medusa Hair Goat Face Schultz, and Debbie Wasserman, Medusa Hair Goat Face Schultz. So it's not an awkward nickname, but so anyway, they kind of tripped as they're starting to run up the stairs. But so. Which speeches did you see in the Democrat so far that impressed you?
Oh, you know, Kelly, I'm not sure I'd go so far to say impressed. I think it's showing a lot of discord in the Democrat Party right now.
Well, and so I didn't mention this also, that Private Sanders, he's been stripped of his regalia. Private Sanders has now left the Democratic Party, and they're saying, well, see, that proves that Debbie Goatface should have been doing all this evil stuff.
You know, it's when you chase people out of your party, that's not usually a good thing.
Not a good sign. Not a good sign. And there is fury out there that it hasn't even really translated to the screens. It seems like the vast majority of real Sanders backers are looking for a third option. And some of them, a lot of them, are headed towards Gary Johnson.
You know, Kelly, I worked at Gary Johnson's office for 3 years and have a lot of respect for him. That won't be who I'll be casting a vote for, but, you know, he certainly is an individual that cares about people.
And what was he like to interact with? Give us an anecdote or two.
You know, he was great to have I mean, of course, I didn't report directly to him, but he was great to work in his office there. Every day at 3 o'clock, he'd walk through the office. He'd say hello to people on his way to the break room. He'd pop his own popcorn. And anybody could come talk to him about any subject while he stood there in front of the microwave. And then he'd make his way back and say hello to people again on his way back to his office. Very, very personal, very available.
Charming.
You know, when he was governor of our state, he would have a day every month that anybody could come talk to him for 5 minutes. And we would have people sign up, trying to think when we started the sign up. But I mean, He would stay there till midnight if that many people had showed up and wanted to talk to him. And
that's,
I think,
true.
That's a good thing.
That's enlightened. And unfortunately, the county commission never heard about that idea.
You know, at the county commission, we tend to keep limiting public input instead of encouraging it.
Well, it's the Soviet way. But where is Wayne Hancock?
My understanding is he's in Florida with family matters.
Any chance he could run for mayor of Carpetbagger City, Florida?
Well, we'll see what's next for him in his life.
So what are we going to talk about today?
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Okay, so let's talk about that today on the Rossin Report. The South Central Regional Transit District is what I'm going to focus on again. We talked a little bit about this last week.
Did you take a $300 ride over here on the bus?
No, you know, it doesn't run early enough, so I couldn't do that.
Well, how are ambitious people supposed to get to work?
I guess we need to expand the services, Kelly.
That goes without saying.
You know, for your listeners that aren't aware, when I'm talking about the county bus line, it has nothing to do with the city buses. We're just dealing with four routes. Two of those routes go from Las Cruces to Anthony, traveling different roads. And then we have one that travels from Anthony to Chaparral and one that travels from Anthony to Sunland Park. So just for your listeners, Kelly, those are the four bus lines that we're talking about. Those lines currently run three times a day. And we are averaging a revenue of $68 a week from ridership.
Wow, we better get an account together for this.
You know, when you start looking at $68 a week revenue, and then you start to consider how much it is that we're spending, this is not a financially wise move at all.
I have an idea. Can we cancel the service and just give the buses to Billy Garrett, and he can do with them what he wants? The Garrett line.
Well, we're spending on average, just with the county's money, over $14,000 a week. So we spend $14,000 a week and make $68 a week. You know, in the lumber business, there's a joke that says, it's okay, we'll make it up in volume. And maybe that's what the goal is here. We'll just keep losing money and make it up in volume.
I have an idea. Let's make cars illegal in the city.
Then people will have to ride it. You know, it's disappointing, Kelly. I think when you look at those ridership numbers, and keep in mind, this is not a new system. The system's been going on for over 6 months. We had a four-month pilot project before that. So we've had this system for almost a year, and people are still not riding it. I think that shows you that the system is not designed around what the public needs. And so Kim Hakes has a great way of saying this. He says, I'm not against buses. I'm against empty buses. And I think that's a great quip there, because it's not the transportation.
I have an idea. Can we turn it into an Uber service?
Well, you know, for $300 a ride, I think it would be very easy to subsidize Uber and actually get somebody from their home to where they need to go.
I have another idea. Can we offer it to the cast of The Walking Dead so that they would move their, any chance they could move the production over here to New Mexico?
Maybe to the county commission chambers?
Because there's a lot of great scenes you could film on a bus.
You know, it's just disappointing. With all the needs that we have, to be spending $750,000 this year, $545,000 next year, it's an incredible waste that the people are not using because it doesn't fit their needs.
Do you want more suggestions?
You're usually good with them, just like you are with nicknames. You always come up with something.
Give it to Hillary Clinton for the CHAG line that she'll she's got to have something to do after she loses. But anyway, all right.
You know, we've part of the question here, Kelly, is what the money is going for.
What is it going for?
So we've got this $750,000, $160,000. Looks like we might have a caller.
We do. I didn't mean to rattle you there. This is Kelly. Thanks for the call. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Tom. Have you heard that 12th best run city in the nation?
I thought you were going to say in Dona Ana.
Something like that.
Tom, I did. I did hear that, and I'm not sure how that's calculated, but congratulations to the city on that. However, the county didn't make that same list.
Is it possible this is another Russian hack? If it's false information?
At least so. Okay, guys.
Tom, don't leave. What can we use the buses for? Since since nobody's riding them.
We'll take callers and ideas on it. You know, we've got an executive director that's making $94,000 a year plus benefits, brings him to between $120,000 and $132,000. Then because managing those four bus lines is too much for one person to be expected to do, we've now hired him two additional staff members to help him in that.
I have an idea. We need stewardesses.
let's get some stewardesses and some free beverages on the flight.
Sparkling water. A little taste of local chili.
Maybe that'll increase some ridership.
Pecans instead of peanuts.
You know,
work with me here.
I had a constituent that say, you know, it's cheaper to send somebody on a round trip flight to Dallas than it is to get them from Anthony to Las Cruces.
It's probably would be cheaper. Why don't we just build a rocket, take all the money and all the parts from the buses, build a rocket and send it to Mars? It'll be it'd be so much more
exciting.
It'd be in the media.
You could set it off from the spaceport, huh?
And Ken Miyagawashima, when he gets done, I'm sure would love to sacrifice and go to Mars.
Go to Mars. There we
go. Even before he's done. And Bill McCamley. What a wonderful duo. Bill McCamley, the gay prophet, is now touting euthanasia. And we're not talking about Oriental kids living overseas. Okay, we've got a call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna.
Good morning, Donna. What's going on?
Well, I was just going to make a suggestion for those buses. I was speaking with Ken Roberts, undersheriff, and he said that they could really use them to transport people, whether they're, I don't know, prisoners or whoever. So that was it would be something that they could consider.
What a great idea. It's the Rosten Report. Ben, what do you think? Officially?
You know, appreciate that. And Donna, and for the listeners that don't know, I really appreciate you coming to the commission meeting Tuesday to support my amendment to stop funding this thing.
Well, you're welcome. It was my pleasure. I believe that the county and all government should be efficient and accountable to the people, the taxpayers that pay these people.
Absolutely. You know, and it's disappointing to – well – you know, we talk about priorities here all the time. And since you brought up the Sheriff's Department simply has not been a priority of this commission. And it's disappointing that a bus system that the residents don't even want, as proved by the ridership, is getting a higher priority than police, than our Sheriff's Department.
Yes, and that makes me sad, too, because these are the people that are out there 24/7 protecting our lives and making it possible for us to have a good life here in Doniana County.
I have an idea. Let's turn these into super police cruisers. Let's just soup them up a little bit because they're missing vehicles.
I don't know how we'll do in the high speed pursuits there, Kelly, but you know, Donna has a great, Donna's involved with a great organization called Support Your Local Police. And I think Donna, if it's all right, go ahead and plug your next event. You've got an event coming up in August here, I think.
Yes, thank you. We have a meeting coming up, a public meeting, August 19th. That's Friday night at 7 p.m. We're going to be holding it at Mountain View Baptist Church right across the street from City Hall. And we're bringing in a former police detective from New Jersey. And this man has been in law enforcement for years. He can connect the dots between what happened in the 1960s and early 70s with the riots, the burning, the looting, the killing of policemen then, and what's going on today.
All right, Donna. Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate your call in and your interest on this transit district.
Thanks, Donna. Have a
thank
good day.
You.
All right, bye-bye. I've got another idea.
You're good at those.
No, hold on a second. This is a really good one. Hold on a second. It was just there. It was on the tip of my brainstem for the buses. Gosh dang it, I forgot it. All right.
We'll have to go to break and come back then, huh, Kelly?
I'm going to have to stand on my head, shake it out. All right, so got Ben Rosten here. It's wonderful, as always, for the Rosten Report, and we appreciate Ben sponsoring the show. And also, get over to Ben Rosten's business, and how do they get there?
Kelly, we're on the corner of Trevise and Nevada, and you can come by and see us anytime. Our focus, of course, is on doors, windows, fireplaces, garage doors. But we also do a lot of lighting and light fixtures and faucets and hardware and those type of things. So we'd love to help anyone out with any home improvement needs they might have.
And we'll be right back. We're listening to Herbie Hancock today, 720, and one of the great jazz pianists of the last century, and he's still going strong. He's got his own radio show. We'll be right back. 721 AM, Las Cruces AM 1450, KOBE, Rosten Report. 7:25, I am so excited. I remembered my idea. We're going to use the local buses to reenact Race with the Devil, and I think I've got, he hasn't said it yet, but I think Ben Rossin's going to give it a thumbs up. 1975, check it out.
Two men on a dream vacation.
What the hell are they doing? I'm not sure if they think they can.
Back! Frank, they've seen it.
And get trapped in an unbelievable nightmare.
Turn off the light!
Why? What's wrong? What are you guys up to? What?
20th Century Fox presents Race the Devil.
We saw somebody murdered.
What?
Some sort of ritual across the river. A girl got stabbed.
They're chasing us.
Starring Peter Fonda and Warren Oates. There was nowhere they could hide.
Alice, look what was stuck to the back window. It's some kind of message.
Witchcraft.
Witches!
There was no one they could trust.
Well, did anybody hear anything? Didn't anybody see anything?
Won't we a trip? Have a good time. Leave this up to me.
There was nothing they could do.
He followed us all the way from Bandera. We're here right now watching.
All right, so that is a movie that was filmed in New Mexico, Race with the Devil, and it's exciting. And it was these two couples that are in a Winnebago, and they're being chased by devil worshipers after they accidentally stumbled across a ceremony, the kind of ceremony that probably happens in Dona Ana once a week. And they're chased across New Mexico. And instead of using a Winnebago, why not a Dona Ana bus?
You know, Kelly, that certainly sounds like a horror film. I'm afraid 1975 was a little bit before my time, so I've not seen that. But the county bus system certainly is a horror story for the voters and or for the taxpayers in Dona Ana County.
All right. So anyway, that's our idea so far for how to save this troubled transit system that is averaging how many riders a day?
$68 a week, and so that would be roughly about $14 a day. So that's about where the ridership is on those 12 lines.
Is it 10 riders a day? Do you think? Is it 7? Is it 5?
Averaging less than one rider per leg.
Oh,
so
okay,
about 10 riders a day.
10 riders a day. Getting back to reality. What can be done about this bus system from Satan?
Well, you know, Kelly, at Tuesday's county commission meeting, as I have done on four other occasions, I brought up an amendment to defund the bus system. I get all kinds of nice allegations and people calling me names during the commission meeting, which is always a challenge. But, you know, it's people aren't riding the bus. The money's not being spent wisely. In fact, the money's going into the back pockets of certain individuals to pay them a very high compensation rate. And that's not what should be happening with the taxpayers' money. And so I'll continue to bring this up every time we talk about the budget, every time we get a chance to. I'll continue to bring up an amendment to remove the funding for the tax or for the bus system.
Okay. And so... I mean, do these people, did they ever admit it was a mistake?
No. In fact, during Tuesday's county commission meeting, I was told we just have to give it more time and people will start riding it. You know, Kelly, then the question is how long? We've already had the bus system for over 10 months. Ridership is dismal. There's no reason to keep funding this thing if people aren't interested in riding it. There's a lot better ways we could fund the need here and if you accept that there is some level of transportation need, then let's talk to those individuals that have the need and find out what service would actually help them. Instead of putting a bus line on major highways or major roads in the county and telling people they've got to walk to it to get on it and walk away from it to get wherever they're trying to go.
It is a conundrum because the people voted against this, and then in the great wisdom and the profound Aristotelian Platonic wisdom that very few people have, such as Wayne Hancock and Billy Garrett, they decided that we needed a bus system, and now they're confronted with no riders. But this doesn't mean they're wrong. What's the bigger picture I'm missing here?
Well, the bigger picture on the vote was we were told the people just didn't know what they were voting on. And so you couldn't take the voters' wishes on that because obviously they didn't understand the question.
Right.
And so that was the argument there. And now the argument is you have to give it more time.
If they're that dumb, maybe they don't understand what a bus is to begin with.
You know, it's amazing to me the disregard of the voters and the public waste of taxpayer dollars. At a time right now when every public entity is going through budget shortfalls and having challenges, and we at the county are looking at, well, we can't maintain equipment over at the 911 call center. We don't have enough money to do that, but we can go ahead and keep funding this bus system.
One of the premises of elitism, and don't forget that Marxism is based on elitism because it is supposed to be led by this highly enlightened group of people, premises is the average person is as dumb as a box of rocks. And so having that, and that's why in John Locke's idea behind the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and everything, the Declaration, his idea was that government had to be based on cooperation through consent. You had to have the consent of the people to govern them. And that idea doesn't exist in leftism because the presumption is the people are not smart enough to take part in their own government. And you're just illustrating it where these people are coming from.
And I think we see that from the chairman, who's limited public input, put in a sign-in in place, but instead of having, he's cut down the amount of time that you can speak for. And it's very obvious that the commission right now is not interested in hearing from the public.
Where is Wayne Hancock? Is he still in Carpetbagger City? Is he coming back to lead these lost masses? Or
my understanding, Kelly, is he's in Florida. He's been there for 5 weeks, I think, and so dealing with some sort of a family issue.
Is the family issue losing office and going into deep depression?
You know, we have the opportunity for people to call into a county commission meeting as well, but he has chosen not to do that, Kelly.
Is there an opportunity for him to call into a grief counselor?
Well, you know, the county does provide some employee options like that. Unfortunately, you know, about David Gutierrez not taking advantage of that either, but we've got all kinds of counseling services available for our employees.
I'm volunteering to call up Wayne Hancock and help guide him down the path.
I'm sure he would appreciate that.
I'm sure he would too. 733 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 on 1450 KOBE. Are you done? Are you out of here?
I'm out of here, Kelly. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Again.
Thanks. This has been exciting. We'll be right back, folks. Wait, we have one more call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
My name's Dale.
Dell, thanks for calling. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
No, I just wanted to comment on those empty buses going out to the county.
Yeah.
They should turn them into tour buses.
That's a great idea. Finally, somebody comes up with a great idea.
Yeah. Give the tourists a handful of pecans and some Deming water and maybe a green chili burrito.
That sounds like a great idea. But can we have a resolution at the next meeting?
We'll make them into tourist buses. That sounds like a good idea to me.
Sure. And then on that, Terrence, this is the guy that is costing us, what, $80,000 a year to keep him employed and $300,000 to keep him out of jail, right?
That's it. The county has paid out three times now on lawsuits against him for behavior that's simply not appropriate. And he assures the voters that he's done nothing wrong.
Okay, guys. Well, keep the issues on the air, and we're behind you guys.
We're fighting for it. Thanks for the great idea. Have a good day, Del.
Yes, sir.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks. Hey, thanks for coming on. Thanks for sponsoring the Rossin Report. Get over to Rossin's Builder Supply and get some knockers, get some door frames, et cetera. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Kelly.
All right. I finally had a brilliant idea on this. The Hills Have Eyes. That's another New Mexico movie. We'll do a tour from the Hills Have Eyes set over to the Trinity area, give people a little radioactive stone on a on a necklace. A colorful brochure. The United States government conducted 331 nuclear tests in the desert of New Mexico. Is that true? Radioactive fallout contaminated and mutated all living things within 1,300 square miles. Oh my gosh, we got a phone call here. Hopefully it's a member of the cast of The Hills Have Eyes. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. It's Bill.
Bill, hey, what's up?
Well, we need to tie this bus thing in with Race for the Devil. You need to get the spaceport in there, too.
Oh, my gosh, of course,
great,
yeah.
Adventure, you know. And maybe if we're really creative, we could get Gilda Texture from the movie Vanishing Point of 1971.
Holy cow, what a classic.
Make a girl on the motorcycle in there somewhere.
That sounds like a fun-filled tour. I mean, you're going to get a lot of people from out of state.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, we probably should change the name of Doniana County too, to, I don't know, maybe the Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone or the Hills Have Eyes in County.
There you go. Let's get it all together here. You have a good day.
You too, Bill. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. The Hills Have Eyes. That's what we're going to use our buses for the tour.
Can you imagine the first people that crossed this desert? They didn't know where they were.
Yeah, I can, because neither do we.
Hey, get up.
Tell me again why we couldn't fly like normal people.
Don't see too many travelers around here. Where are y'all headed?
San Diego.
Hold on just a second. Put you on hold. The Hills Have Eyes, and we do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna again, and I have an idea for the another idea for the buses.
I can't wait.
We have to have tourist buses to the wineries in this region.
Not a bad idea.
It could be called the Wine Line, and it would be a smashing success. That way people could go drink and have a ride home, and they wouldn't have to worry about smashing up on the way home.
Yeah, they wouldn't have to take part in the official hobby of New Mexico, drinking and driving.
That's right. Absolutely.
Thanks for the call. Have a good day.
Thanks.
All right, bye. All right, we're still taking suggestions here. The Hills Have Eyes tour is could be the top one right now. The Wine Line is another good one. All right, folks. Now, here is, I thought you might want to hear a little bit from Gary Johnson. Here's Gary Johnson, let's take a break first and get back. I got it because Gary Johnson's our own beloved governor, and we'll come back and hear a little bit on his campaign. His campaign's growing. He's not going to be the president, but his campaign is growing, and there's a lot of enthusiasm for it. 7:42, Kelly O'Connell, The Hills Have Eyes tour. Starting from the studios of KOBE. We'll be right back. All right, how about a little bit on Gary Johnson trying to upend this race? Check it out, MSNBC.
Trump showed up at the RNC yesterday. Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson, the former New Mexico governor, slowly gaining traction in recent polling. Take a look at these numbers. Our latest NBC News Survey Monkey weekly tracking poll. Hillary Clinton barely edges out Donald Trump, in fact, by a single point. But when you factor in all the candidates, including Gary Johnson, Trump is a point above Clinton at 40%, while Gary Johnson garners 10% of the vote. Joining me now, former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson. He is with me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Cameron, thank you.
So in this poll, as we just pointed out, you get 10% of the vote, but it doesn't obviously make you the winner of the race or even close.
Well, just one correction in what you reported there was slowly gaining traction. In the last 6 weeks, these numbers have doubled.
Yeah, absolutely.
So politics is all about momentum, and wow, there's a lot of momentum, a lot of appetite. I'm really surprised by the fact that I think 1,000 people yesterday said they were going to vote for me.
Why are you surprised if you feel and you see the results, the doubling of the numbers in the poll? I told you in the commercial break, pretty much every day you are trending on social media in some way.
Well, when you see it on paper, when you read it on the internet, it's different than actually having people face-to-face. And interestingly, not one negative comment yesterday. You would think that somebody would have said, hey, what are you doing here? Well, this is sort of a kind of a homecoming, having been a former Republican governor and my running mate Bill Weld, also two-term former governor of Massachusetts. I think we bring a unique combination here that drives right down the middle between Hillary and Trump.
It's interesting you say that unique combination. Jeb Bush, July 11th, actually suggested considering voting for you. Let me play what he said. We don't have the tape, but he says, if you believe like I do that the presidency is a sacred ground and you want a president that holds up the Constitution and you don't believe either one of these candidates fulfill the primary kind of objective, then I cannot vote for either of them. He goes on to say Gary Johnson and William Well are people that he would consider. Again, looking at the poll, it still shows you the low double digits. And in that poll where you are factored in, it could be a Donald Trump victory. Would you be comfortable with that? And I know this question has been posed to you many times, but given what you've seen this week.
Well, Bill Weld and myself would not be doing this if we didn't believe that we actually have the opportunity of winning. But the only opportunity to win is to be in the presidential debate. And I think that's going to happen. So I want to be very respectful here at the Republican National Convention, respectful of the fact that Donald Trump won the nomination. But I'd love to be in that debate come November.
You need 15% to show up at the polls on average to get on the debate stage there. If you hit that number and you feel confident you will, do you believe that Jeb Bush could potentially endorse you, or even Ted Cruz, who said, won't vote for Hillary Clinton, but clearly he's not planning to vote for Donald Trump?
Well, in November, it's not going to be an essay question when you go in the booth.
Correct.
It's going to be multiple choice.
And it's going to be a gut question for some people.
Well, and that multiple choice is going to be, I think a lot of people are going to pull the Gary Johnson lever. I think there's an opportunity here, Cameron, that I might be the next president of the United States.
All right, Gary.
What do you think? Okay, what would it take? All right, let's just play this out a little bit. Gary Johnson, our old governor, nice guy. You heard Ben Rossin say that he was a wonderful person to work for, and he has very open-minded, very, very easy access. Kind of an ideal leader. Let's just say that something comes out of these WikiLeaks releases that not only rocks Hillary's campaign to the brink, but actually seems to implicate her in a serious crime. Her support plummets. The party itself is trying to figure out if they need to name a replacement, Joe Biden or whoever. Or maybe Tim Kaine and put him into the president's as a candidate. So let's just say her support craters. It goes down. It drops in half. It goes down to 20%. Half right now. I think Hillary is trending at. I think she's like at 39%. So let's just say it goes down to 20%. Johnson's polls go up, and then Trump does one of his infamous, things. But this time he takes it too far, and everybody gets mad at him, and he goes down to 20%. But that is not completely out of the realm of possibilities. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Chuck.
Morning, Chuck. Hope you're well.
I was,
what's your name?
Listening to Gary Johnson just now. Sometimes, I don't know if you're aware of what Glenn Beck has been up to lately, but I catch him a little bit because mainly because he comes on after your show.
No, I got you. I got you.
I just hear a little. Pardon?
I got you. And I mean, Glenn Beck, even though I've come to really have a problem with him, is an extraordinarily talented guy. And it's been tragic to me to see the direction he's gone because he's so talented and we need as many conservative voices out there as possible.
Well, yesterday on his program, they were talking about the grand plan. Some guy came on and they were talking about, and what they're saying is, what they do is they support Johnson in as many states as possible, and neither Trump nor Clinton get enough to carry the election, so it goes to the Congress, and they get Mitt Romney.
All right. Okay. Well, I think Romney might have burned his own bridge, but
yeah.
All right. So listen. When Bill Clinton ran for office, if it was not for the other guy from Texas, Ross Perot, Bill Clinton never gets elected. But Bill Clinton, when he gets into the election, when he starts running, you're blowing pretty hard there. Back off the phone just a little bit.
Okay.
If not for Ross Perot, Bill Clinton never gets elected. So all of this stuff is you roll the dice out and you see what the game gives you back.
It's just, I find it amusing the different trails that Glenn Beck goes trotting down.
Well,
he gets kind of extreme.
He's kind of a lost soul.
I find it a little bit amusing.
He's kind of a lost soul. I mean, he's trying to be a prophet for the entire country, but he's a Mormon and he's also suggesting people get killed. And we've got another call. Anything else?
No, I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you very much and have a good day. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, good morning, Kelly. This is Steve.
Steve, hey, what's up? What's up, my friend?
Not much. Enjoyed your show, listened to the Commissioner Rawson. But this thing about with Gary Johnson, I think, could really take off. I think he'll become the protest voter.
Why don't we spend a little more time this week getting into him then?
Yeah. And what I was simply going to say was I'm grateful he's going to give like a psychological release valve for millions of Americans who can't really don't want to vote for either of the top two.
Well, you know,
candidates.
Steve, one thing that we have to remember is all of these politicians and candidates in the past present with us this almost, you know, this kind of ossified, this concrete list of things that they stand for that's a reflection of the party. When you get people like Trump or especially Johnson, you get people that are not really a reflection of the party. It's kind of refreshing, you know, the ideas.
Yeah, and it's going to give people an opportunity to register their protest. And I think he can grow. But the point I was going to make, add to it, maybe for future discussion, like you said, is he doesn't really have to win. He could simply win a couple states enough to make it a spoiler where neither candidate receives the 271 collegiate votes, I call them.
Well, it is kind of fascinating. Votes. You know, it's think about this. Something terrible comes out of WikiLeaks and Hillary loses all support within the party. Her numbers go down to 15%. Trump goes over the line or something's discovered about some secret deal with the Russians. Both candidates treading water at 15 to 20%. Gary Johnson's perfectly poised to take the lead.
Yeah. And I'm all for him. I'm a Democrat. And I remember him in the 90s. He was the only one who stood up to Senator Manny Arrogance and the whole crew up north.
Yeah.
So he's got my respect and my best wishes, but very grateful because he is providing a psychological release. People can say to themselves, "Well, I don't have to vote for any of those two dogs."
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Thanks for the.
You stay well, Kelly. Great show.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Have a great day. All right, folks. Well, I just want you to know there's a lot of Democrats that listen to the show. Steve's a great caller, but your voice is just as important on the show as anybody else as a Republican, Libertarian, or whatever. It's a community show, but I do know that there's a lot of Democrats in this county that are conservative and that are kind of common sense Democrats. And so anyway, it's been nice hanging out with you. Let me throw a few things towards you one more time. Well, let's take a break and I'll have some concluding thoughts. 756 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE. We'll be right back. All right, so your numbers for the Trump versus Clinton almost, 7.5 points above Trump is 7.5 points above Hillary Clinton. If the race was held today, all other things being equal, it looks like Trump would win. Now, usually during a convention, the party that is having the convention benefits, so they might get a bounce out of this, but it's been chaotic. It's been overly staged and theatrical, and there's just a lot of crazy stuff going on there. Now, to what to do with the buses, one person says the wine line to tour the wineries. Another person, which just happens to be me, a reenactment of Race with the Devil, or a tour, somebody else's like a horror tour where we do The Hills Have Eyes and Race with the Devil combined. I think it's a good idea. Or super cruisers for the beleaguered Sheriff's Department, soup them up, and they could help, you know, a Krispy Kreme can also sponsor them. It's just ideas to save the bus here, you know. 7:59, have a great day. Thanks for hanging out. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. Ciao. We'll see you back in 22 hours.